are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom. I've got Lotus with me. We are digging deeper into these icebergs, however you want to phrase
berg.
It. One berg. Multiple ice cubes. And we're going to work our way down into them. We're up to number 44 on our list, and things are getting more and more interesting as we go. And Lotus, I think there's some on this list that are you specifically excited for any of these in particular? Because there's a few maybe.
Yes, this should be a fun episode. Not that the others aren't fun. I don't really take that weird ways. Yeah. First fun episode.
All the other ones terrible. This one's great. This is like every one of these is a different selection of things, right? And they all feel kind of randomized, even though the general trend is that we're getting deeper and deeper into more obscure lore or things with more conspiracy theories or whatever.
Exactly.
And this week is no different because we're starting off the first one with number 44. I'm going to say this word and you're going to say what? Okay. Who remembers the name of an island in between Tamriel and Akavir named Ineslia? I think that's how you pronounce it. It starts with a Y. Ineslia.
That's the only way I've ever heard it. I have no idea if that is correct.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Now, this is on the list, and here's the quick little explanation. It is an island that lies somewhere between Tamriel and Akavir. Uriel the Fifth, remember Uriel the Fifth? He conquered it during his campaign into Akavir, also notable for being the setting for a fan project for Utok Mythos. All right, so we're going to get into this a little bit. Now, this digs into the concept the history of Uriel Septim the Fifth, who was probably the best military mastermind after Tiber Septim. So, correct. Yeah, so we're talking Third Age of the World. We're talking the Septim Dynasty, and Uriel Septim the Fifth gets the idea to conquest Akavir, the continent to the east. And in doing so, he amasses an army, puts them on a bunch of ships, and goes to the east. But in order to go to the east, he has to kind of stepstone through different islands that he creates these little military bases to then launch the next part of the campaign to get to the continent. One of those places is Ineslia. Now, what's interesting about this, Lotus, is when I think about this, I'm often thinking like, oh, well, these are like abandoned islands. This is just a chain of just like empty places where they can, stop along the way, find some food or whatever. No, these places are probably, and it seems like in the lore, are actually occupied by inhabitants because they have to conquer these islands along the way.
Right. It's not like they're just there and it's, we just march in and we take over and everything's done.
Yeah, like, there's a bunch of banana trees. Let's just eat all the bananas and keep moving.
We just take these bananas and move on with our lives.
Yeah, cut down some trees, get some wood, repair the ships, keep moving. No, they have to conquer these places. And this part of the lore is pretty obscure. We have some stories about this. We have some of the events explained. We have parts of the campaign explained. We have confusion about what happens to Uriel Septim the Fifth. The official story is that he died in the conflict in Akavir, but there is rumor that he may have been kidnapped and also could still be alive somehow. There's all sorts of speculation around that, but this specific iceberg isn't about that. It's about specifically this island and the fact that this became a fan project. Now, what does that mean? And why haven't we heard about this fan project, Utok Mythos, which you might have, but chances are you probably haven't. So here's the details about that, this Lotus, and let me know your thoughts on this. Utok Mythos was a fan project that involved a lot of people. There's like an entire list of people who were coordinated. It started back in 2014 by Icefire Warden, who was an active member of the Elder Scrolls, like online fan base, forums, things like that. The origins, I'm not going to go into all the details, but the origins for this started with a Batman joke that he thought would be funny in Elder Scrolls, because it seems like there might be bat people on this island. And then that develops
such a deep lore. It's weird.
It's so weird. It's such like a meta thing too, because he brings out Michael Kirkbride, who somehow gets involved with this and starts working with some of the group that was putting this together. But the project died in 2017, which is most likely why you haven't heard about it. If you haven't, it was almost resurrected in like 2019, but it didn't actually turn into anything. And I wrote in the notes here, much like Uriel Septim V, Ice Fire Warden disappeared and hasn't been part of the Elder Scrolls community, at least online, in the last few years. As far as we know, I don't know if he goes by a different name or just was involved in different ways.
Yeah.
But that's why this is on the list. It's this weird island with some weird lore that is not necessarily confirmed in game, which means it's like pseudo canon. And on top of it, there was a fan project that never actually went anywhere. So there you go. What do you think about all that?
So it's kind of funny. This is one of those ones where I'm not sure how much of this we could really go with is 100% quote unquote canon related to this. Mm-hmm. However, I love that this almost like, because there's so little on this, it almost just is like, look, until you explain it better, this is kind of what we're going to just accept.
Right.
Which is
right.
Kind of a fun little thing. Because again, it's not obviously confirmed with them or anything like that. And I actually didn't know about the original origins of like the Batman joke thing to mm-hmm. start with. Like, mm-hmm. That's the first time I had ever heard about that was when I was reading through these. I was like, the hell?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the reason I say that I kind of like this one, because I tend to not like things that are a little too out there type of deal. The thing about this one is, since there's so little on this at all, and I mean like next to nothing on this except like the very, very small portion that's kind of alluded to, I kind of like the fact that it's just like, we're just going to go with this until we hear otherwise, even though there's not really that much to it.
Yeah.
It's one of the more fan project-y things that I'm like, I don't hate this. I mean, do I think it holds a lot of credence? No, not really.
Right. But and there's also like the things I've read posted about the fan project are not very specific. Like, I don't know exactly the scope and scale of what this fan project was going to be, you know, like, but I don't know. It's neither here nor there because it didn't happen.
Right.
And Rob the Princess says, you likely haven't heard of it. Haven't you covered this exact topic before? I'm also not under any pretext that 100% of our listeners have listened to every single episode we've done in the past, because there's a bunch of them and some people just listen from the newest and then go backwards. But anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. So any other thoughts on that, Lotus?
No, not really. I mean, that one's a little hard to go too much into just because of like how little there is in concrete evidence and fan projects in general. I do. I struggle to accept too much of them.
Like, well, so many of them start off as these wonderful and fun and creative ideas, and then they just never really get to any like final form, you know, like it's really difficult to push that stuff past the line.
Yes. And to that thing, it's like, not that I don't love the creativity of the community. And honestly, with the way that everything has been going recently, when it relates to the Creation Club, honestly, because now they're essentially making stuff become canon. Which is kind of fun, but just the reason I'm kind of just like, this isn't really something the game developers designed. I only take them so far.
Right.
However, right. Like I said, this one doesn't really bug me or anything like that. It's just kind of like, yeah, it is what it is. And it's funny enough. And there's so little on the topic anyways, kind of who cares? Like it is what it is.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And I like the idea. We've talked about Creation Club and fan project. We talked about I talked with the patrons last week. One of the things that hadn't occurred to me, one of the things that did occur to me is it's kind of cool to have Creation Club stuff, even though I know it's controversial and not everyone's into it. But the idea that Bethesda could take a project that somebody else is working on, give it like their thumbs up and say, well, this is canon now. Like, If they're willing to do that, that sounds awesome. But then the second piece of that is, if those creators can actually get paid for that and be supported in some way by Bethesda, then it probably makes the chances of these fan projects actually coming out and reaching completion higher.
Coming to fruition.
Yeah.
Right. Which is interesting, because they're essentially letting the community have control of the series they love in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
And it's always been a conversation approach to that, or, yeah, you know, that just like, oh yeah, that's something neat they're doing. But yeah, it's hard, because I guess you and I were there at the beginning of a lot of the internet, because we remember a time before the internet and a time after the internet.
Because we're old people, yes.
Yeah, because we're old. Yeah. And at the beginning, man, fan theory stuff got real weird originally. So, like,
oh man, go back. My mind is going the Wayback Machine to the early 2000s forum posts from like the time of Morrowind's release.
Right. So that's sort of, I do sort of have that problem where it's hard for me to shake the concept of just like, dude, some of the fan theory stuff I've seen. I'm just like, good God. I was like, this is super cringe. But I also don't like to have it just as a result, just discredit actually like good writing or cool things that at this point, like we've said, the developers themselves are all about involving. So clearly they find merit in it too.
Yeah. Whenever you put anything out to the public, you're going to get an entire spectrum of responses, right? So for every brilliant fan theory, there's going to be something that makes you just roll your eyes and go, oh my God, what are they thinking? You know, it's like, there's going to be a whole spectrum. But it is kind of fun to have this sort of stuff and to have these little details in the lore get kind of focused on, because all of a sudden somebody just, oh, that's the thing I care about. I'm just going to focus on this little tiny island in the middle of nowhere, and we're going to make a whole thing about it.
And with how real, quote unquote, the world tends to be in a lot of different ways, it's sort of one of those things where there's so little to this. Like, okay, well then, yeah, you know what? Let this one go. This one's fine for what it is. And right, it's like, yeah, whatever. And unless they want to flesh it out, this likely will never be fleshed out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. Chances are.
Likely we're never going to get any type of substantial definitive answer to this, because it's like, okay, it's just whatever, man. Like, it's just part of the world. We didn't require a lot of explanation, and that's fine.
Yep. And it shows up in a iceberg list like this is a thing that we'll now remember.
And then two dudes spend some time deciding, let's chat about it for a while.
That's right. All right. So let's move on to the next one. Number 45. This one I think you're going to find interesting. Draven Indoril. Here's the quick little explanation. A nightingale who was responsible for finding the staff of chaos for Yhaegar Tharn. We're talking arena time. Yeah, we're talking arena.
Like Elder Scrolls arena, yeah.
Right. End of the Septim Dynasty, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. This is a conspiracy theory that itself contradicts another conspiracy theory, the real Baron Zaya, which states that Yhaegar Tharn was the Nightingale. To complicate matters even more, Lawrence Schick has also suggested that neither account is entirely true. And it's not the end of the dynasty. It was a limited end because things continued afterwards, but it was a takeover of the dynasty. It's probably a better way to say that before somebody messages me. A dynasty switch for a little while. But I've got this broken down into many different sections in order to really explain what's going on here. So point number one, what is the context? What are the Nightingales? Because you might be thinking, oh, the Nightingales, like in Skyrim. Not exactly. So before Skyrim, this is before the fourth era, players didn't know much about the Nightingales. That word was used in the lore and in the previous games, but it didn't mean the same thing as what it means in Skyrim, because the concept evolved over time and eventually it was incorporated into Thieves Guild and all of that. So to the general public, the Nightingale was this legendary singular master thief of myth. Almost like a ghost story. Who was this person?
The Gray Fox.
The Gray Fox. Yeah, it was kind of that sort of thing. That's a good example.
Yeah.
In reality, they are an elite secret triad of the Thieves Guild in the Fourth Age who swear a lifelong and afterlife oath to the Daedric Prince Nocturnal to protect her shrines, specifically the Twilight Sepulchre, weird words. They're granted supernatural stealth abilities, and this, like, that's what this eventually became. But here's the conspiracy theory. What does the real Baron Zaya have to do with it? Well, the real Baron Zaya, and I did an episode on this. This is one of the ones where you couldn't be there for the week, so I just broke down the real Baron Zaya.
Yeah.
Probably like
excellent book if
two and a half,
people have not read it.
It's 3 years ago.
It's very long. Yeah, I was going to say it's a long story, but it's also very good.
Right. So the real Baron Zaya is an infamous in-game book series that debuted in The Elder Scrolls Daggerfall and also shows up in Morrowind and then in the rest of the series, or at least most of the rest of the series. It is presented as a scandalous, uncensored biography of Queen Baron Zaya. In the story, the book claims that a mysterious, charming master thief known only as the Nightingale seduced Queen Baron Zaya. He used her to gain access to the catacombs beneath Mournhold to steal the Staff of Chaos. So this all tracks with the Yeggar Tharn stuff, right? Mm-hmm. In the twist in the book, it explicitly states that the Nightingale was actually Yeggar Tharn in disguise. Tharn used the Staff of Chaos to trap Emperor Euroseptum VII in another dimension, impersonating him on the Imperial throne for 10 years. This was the plot of Arena. And by the way, that's the same Uriel Septim that is in Oblivion, who, like,
it is.
Dude has a rough life.
Take a lot of, I was gonna say, the first games all happen very close to each other.
Right, right.
Massive time gaps are much farther along in the series.
Right. So if this is true, Yeggar Tharn was the Nightingale before we had the established Thieves Guild thing, who used Daedric gifts to orchestrate the ultimate political coup. Which seems to make sense, right?
Sure.
But there's a conspiracy theory. When the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim introduced the Nightingales as an active faction, it added a new in-game book written by Gallus, a former guildmaster, titled The Nightingales Volume 2, What We Were. This book completely contradicts the real Baron Zaya, as happens in the lore all the time, right? Unreliable narrator, all of that. In this story, Gaius,
I guess it could be Gaius, yeah.
Yeah, claims the real Baron Zaya is Imperial historical revisionism. He asserts that Yeggar Tharn didn't have the thieving skills to break into Mournhold, so Tharn hired the actual Nightingale of that era, a Dunmer Master thief named Draven Indoril. Now, this is the cover-up. According to this version, Draven Indoril stole the staff, handed it to Tharn, and later seduced Baron Zaya. When Tharn's grand deception fell apart, Baron Zaya allegedly protected Draven by having her scribe write the real Baron Zaya altered to claim that Tharn and the Nightingale were the same exact person. This completely erased Draven from the history, protecting him from the Empire's wrath. So this was something she did because she had fallen for him or was in a an affair with him or whatever that was. The book also drops the bombshell that Draven and Baron Zaya had a child together named Dralsi, who eventually gave birth to Carlaya, your Nightingale companion in Skyrim. This would mean Carlaya is Baron Zaya's granddaughter and carries royal blood, if this is all true. But is it? This is where it gets even more interesting.
This is where it gets icebergy.
This is where it gets real icebergy, right? Because we have this stuff before in the lore. One story tells this, a character in a game says something that's contradictory. Is that true? Is this true? Are they both true? Are none of them true? Like, how does that work? Well, to complicate the iceberg even further, former ZeniMax Online Studios lore lead or lead lore master Lawrence Schick weighed in during a developer Reddit AMA, reminding fans of the core rule of Elder Scrolls. There is no objective, omniscient narrator. When asked about the contradictions between Draven Indoril and Yeggar Tharn, Schick heavily implied that neither book is a completely factual account. In the Elder Scrolls universe, history is written by individuals with heavy political bias, personal secrets, or incomplete data. How many times have you and I said this when we've gone over the lore?
Literally constant.
It happens all the time. Now, the question here is, why would the real Baron Zaya lie? Well, it's framed as an underground scandalous text, but Baron Zaya herself protects the author in Morrowind. It serves her political image to frame her past affair as a manipulation by a master arch-villain, Tharn, rather than a rogue Dunmer thief. But why would the Nightingale Volume 2 lie? Well, Gaius was a Thieves Guild master writing a secret history to romanticize his own faction, elevating the Nightingale to a figure who outsmarted Yeggar Tharn and fathered a royal lineage, giving the Nightingales immense mythic prestige. So both stories benefit if people believe that they're true, which means right. both of them are like a little bit, I don't know, maybe they didn't happen.
Yeah. So this one is, I love this one, actually. This is one of my favorite ones. Because I think the way Lawrence Schick phrases this, that it's like, well, you know, maybe it's one of those things where maybe there's a little bit of truth in everything, and it's also maybe not the full truth mm-hmm. type of deal. Mm-hmm. This is one of those scenarios where I love the fact that this is probably a little of all of this.
Right. It's there might be a little bit true about
everything. There's a little bit of truth, yes. I think, in all of this, but none of it, to Schick's point, necessarily is the full truth.
It's not the full account.
Both accounts are part of the truth, and for various reasons. We explained why, obviously, that there's reasons for that. Like, you just went over that. That's fine. Like, and there's likely even more.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
To be fair, it's just like, in some situations, like, you know, what is the connection to Baron Zaya and the just. Politically, some of these scenarios could also make her look stupider than other ones. Sure. You know what I mean?
Sure. Like, or somebody who was seduced by a thief may not be the thing that really is beneficial to her
right.
public persona. Like, well,
the lesser of these two concerns is, okay, I'll be seduced this way or another right. way type of thing.
It's yeah, like, neither look, of those really puts her in the best light.
Neither puts her in the best light, but it's like, oh, it's... Sometimes it can be helpful to acknowledge a weakness in a scenario like this, mm-hmm. but you choose a weakness that's less than the other one because it still right. puts you in a position of looking like, well, okay, but you know, that other one's stupid. I wouldn't be tricked by somebody like that. I was tricked by this other person who everybody already knows is a known threat or something along those right. lines.
Oh, he's an evil villain in the story. So we'll just go right. with that.
But right. then, you know, from the perspective of, you know, the Nightingales in general, you've got this scenario. It's just like, dude, we need to sell this. Like, we need to sell this. This is why we're awesome. Like,
yeah.
look what we did type of deal. So,
right. Well, I mean, that's a massive heist in like multiple ways, the Staff of Chaos, but also like right. her affection. Like, that's a kind of a heist in its own way, you know?
Exactly. Yes. It's like stealing her affections.
Stealing her affections. Yep.
There's mm-hmm. exactly. So like that's just it. There's so many benefits to a lot of this stuff by having the story be true from the person who's telling it. So it's like, this is one of the ultimate ones that I love the writing in this series so much. Cause it's like, oh, this is written from a perspective of totally in lore. Why is everybody writing this? What are they gaining from this story?
Right. Now there's another angle here too, that occurred to me. The name of the thief is Draven Indoril, which yes. implies that he is of House Indoril of Morrowind.
Yep.
Right. Where does that name come from? Indoril Nerevar.
Correct.
Right? So he may be, many of the people of the house are direct descendants of Indoril Nerevar. Mm-hmm. Maybe a descendant of one of the most important heroic figures to the Dunmer, and somebody who didn't particularly find the Empire favorable, which means that he may have been someone who was following in the footsteps of his ancestor and sticking one to the Empire through these means. So you've got this other kind of connection. There is motivation there to see why somebody named Draven Indoril would do something directly to help Yegar Tharn take over the Empire. Like, there is a piece, there's something there. Like, it doesn't feel like that name was just chosen at random, you know?
No, it doesn't. And again, every one of these scenarios has a thing that benefits the potential writer, the way this is written.
Yeah.
So again, it's hard to separate that these things all have an element of propaganda to them, because that's how things are written oftentimes.
Yep.
In the real world, I mean, like that's a lot
oh, yeah.
of times why
yeah.
things are written that way.
Right.
So it's really cool that type of thing is factored in the way it is.
Yeah. So if you have any other theories about this one, let us know. I find that one interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I could see there being even more to this one, but this is one that I absolutely love because I feel like it encompasses so much of the like writing that I love about this series with like, well, there's this and this, and here are the reasons why it could be true and it could be false, and part of it could be true and part of this one could be false, and there's this propaganda as a side effect of this. Love that. Yeah. Absolutely love that stuff.
Yeah. Rob in chat is saying also making Carlyle a dragonborn technically because of the royal blood meant during that time. Carlyle may be a descendant of dragonborn and the Nerevine. Nerevarine. I always stumble over that word himself. This sounds like a main character from a fan fiction if ever I saw one. Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like that creates interesting descendants who maybe stories come from later. So we'll see. Maybe I wouldn't be surprised in Elder Scrolls 6 for things like this to show back up again in other interesting ways, because that's what they do in the series. So keep that one in mind for the future. Now, this is another one that you should keep in mind for the future, because I'm not sure that we've really seen the culmination of what this means. Number 46, this is something Lotus and I talk about a lot, something that tends to be pretty commonly understood in the lore, as far as I can tell. But the hero of Kvatch, you, in Elder Scrolls Oblivion, is Sheogorath, because that's the way the story ends, seemingly. Yes. Now, here's the quick little explanation that was part of the iceberg. At the end of Oblivion's Shivering Isles expansion, Sheogorath disappears and the player is appointed by Jigalag as the new Mad God. After this, many NPCs start referring to the player as Lord Sheogorath, or variations of the title. This has led to a fan theory that the hero of Kvatch has, in fact, mantled Sheogorath himself. This theory is arguably supported by Sheogorath's dialogue in Skyrim, because it's the game that comes afterwards, as well as the out-of-game ESO text, Chamberlain Haskell Answers Your Questions, which implies that every Grey March, a new person takes on the title of Sheogorath and replaces the old one. And as far as I'm concerned, this one's pretty airtight.
I don't actually... So this one, I would almost say, like, okay, I love this one. But my thing is, until we got to this one on the iceberg, this is like a couple of the really high up ones on the iceberg.
Yeah, yeah.
This is debated.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a debate here. I think it's
the story.
Right,
like, I think it's literally just the story. And then the dialogue in Skyrim doesn't sort... I mean, it essentially just confirmed... Like, I don't really know how this is... able to be interpreted other ways. You can just add you can add more to it with the context, but it's just, this is just what happened. You're just describing the Shivering Isles.
Yeah. I think the dilemma with it isn't so much that this is like shrouded in secrecy or you have to read between the lines. I think it's that most games don't end with you being the main character and then mantling a Daedric Prince. Like, it seems kind of unbelievable. Like, okay, imagine Morrowind comes out and then you get the two expansion packs, and then online they tease, or it gets leaked somewhere, that in the Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion, they're going to have a DLC where you mantle Sheogorath and become him. Nobody would have believed that in like 2005, right?
Like, sure. Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that's the thing, is that like many people just don't pay that much attention to the actual lore and the dialogue and the story as they're playing through, which is why they listen to shows like this, because they're like, yeah, that sounds familiar. I remember playing through that, you know?
Right.
But it doesn't mean that it's less likely to be true. I think it's just more of a surprise because most RPGs don't end with something like that.
Yeah, this is just, I think, a really cool story element. I don't really think there's a lot to this one. I mean, if you want to consider part of the iceberg, okay, this is like one of the coolest iceberg things there is, but this is just kind of saying like, yeah, the storyline is a really cool twist.
Right. Well, yes, it is.
The story.
Right. Like, and that's really
the story
cool.
They wrote.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This one didn't strike me as digging deep or searching for anything special. This was just, you're just talking about what happened in the Shivering Isles expansion. But it's an awesome expansion and one of the greatest expansions in any game I've ever played. So take that for what it is. I mean, like,
yeah.
If you want to put it on the iceberg, yeah, then this is amazing. And I love this. And this is one of the coolest twists to a thing that I've ever played.
Yeah. I just have to wonder, how do you leverage this in Elder Scrolls 6? you know, because they hint and nod at it a little bit in Skyrim, but like, is there a way to, like, we know we're going to get more Daedric Prince quests. We know there's probably going to be an expansion with some sort of Daedric Prince location like we usually get. But what do you do with it moving forward? So,
like I said, that
I feel like there's something universal about just being a human being in the 21st century and struggling with weight. I know it's something that I've had to deal with, and I go in and out of exercising more and having a better diet, and then I ruin it by eating more pizza and tacos and whatever else. And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way. And diet and exercise are great, but sometimes you need a little bit more. You can lose 20% more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise with Wegovy at Hims. It regulates your appetite so you eat less, and Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles. You can get everything through Hims, so it all happens online. You'll be connected with a licensed provider who helps determine if this is the right treatment for you, and if you're prescribed, your medication is delivered directly to your front door. No insurance is necessary. There's a range of GLP-1 options, and they give you a lot of extra support with 24/7 messaging, team care, in-app lifestyle and nutrition support, recipes and meal plans. They're not just going to sell you the product. They're going to support you and make sure that you do what is right for you. So are you ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/scrollslore to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/scrollslore. hims.com/scrollslore. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit hims.com.
The thing that I think is really cool about stuff like this, and we'll go with this one specifically, is like, yes, you know, there's definitely some nods to it in Skyrim or whatever, but one of the things I liked about Oblivion so much is you weren't the main character throughout the entire game.
Right.
You were supporting the main characters. And then after the game ends, there's this weird side story that you end up suddenly now becoming a major side character that's been throughout the series. You become, so it's the weirdest take on, you're never really the main character in this series or in this game. And then it ends with you becoming this like god in the series as a side effect. And it's like, wow, that's quite a twist for a character who literally wasn't the main character. And then
That accelerated quickly. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, wow, that took quite a turn afterwards. So it's just like, oh man, Oblivion's so good.
Yeah. And I think that's part of why, I don't know, it's part of why the series is so cool, is because sometimes the games end in ways where you go, wait, that happened? Really? I mean, think about the Dragonborn DLC for Skyrim. Now, you don't become like Hermaeus Mor or something like that, but they introduce the first dragon. You were the last Dragonborn. And then you're in competition with the first Dragonborn. That's a really cool concept. Some of this stuff, especially the DLC stuff, and we're actually going to have another DLC come up in the next one. But like, I don't think we spend enough time really appreciating the way that they use the DLC to throw in these like twists and turns that are the swings are bigger than in the main story, right? It's like, whoa, that's a cool concept.
I feel like they almost like, because again, it's one of the, I guess, complaints that some of the series has gotten over time is just like, oh, well, the dumbing down of it and stuff like that with in a lot of ways. And I feel like they always use the DLC to get weird.
Yeah.
And they're just this is where it's not.
To the series benefit. Like, yeah.
Yes, to the series. But it's just like, that's, I find a lot of times where they really kind of just go wild, and it's just like, yep, we're gonna do this really bizarre story type of thing or whatever. So I actually kind of like that, and that's fine. If they want to have the base story not be quite as extreme, they can go with that if they need to, and then like, okay, they get off the rails when it comes to
It makes sense.
When it comes to the DLC.
It makes sense. You play it safe so that you have something that's easy to kind of get into. People love to have expectations rewarded. People want to feel comfortable with a story that feels familiar, but it's still kind of new at the same time. And then you ramp it up with something really out there. Right. Yeah. And that formula makes a lot of sense. And
yes,
it seems to work. So here, we've got one more.
I was going to say, it allows them to get just weird enough that people remember these stories.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it's not just like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes in the terms of trying to be mainstream, people don't respect the fact that people do like weird stuff.
Right.
They are willing to like, go in, like Game of Thrones was weird right out the gate, not to take it off topic, but it's like, I feel like recently we're getting things like that that are becoming popular in the mainstream when they're actually just sticking to the sort of bizarre source material. Like, because it turns out people just like well-written stories. They don't need to be super milquetoast, just as like, well, we need as many people to relate to it as possible. It's like, you really don't. Like, you really don't. Like, people, you're gonna get an audience. And that audience will enjoy what's there, type of thing.
Right. Ghost Toadlet in chat says, I think that's a good idea. Those who buy the DLC are more invested in the world and will appreciate the weirder stories. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Totally makes sense. And they're able to take more risk, which is more fun for the creators, the writers, the people who do the art stuff, you know, the game designers in general. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got one more. Number 47, The Blood Moon Prophecy. The Skull legend that foretells the coming of Hersine's great hunt into Tamriel. And this goes back to Morrowind. And there is, on the UASP, there is a article about this. I figured we'd just read through parts of the article in order to go into this a little bit. But feel free to chime in, Lotus. The Blood Moon Prophecy is a legend of the Skull, a native group of Nords from Solstheim. It foretells an event which happens every era when Hersine walks Nirn with his hounds to collect mortals that shall become quarry of the Great Hunt. The selected are either taken to the hunting grounds or preyed upon on Nirn. When the Great Hunt is to occur on Solstheim, the hunt is preceded by four signs. The first is the coming of the hounds, where werewolves appear on the island. The second is the fire from the eyes of glass, a pillar of fire that appears on the surface of the frozen lake Fjolding. The third is the tide of woe, a horker massacre, the bodies of which then wash up all over the island's northern coast. The final sign...
Poor horkers.
What did they do to anybody?
I was going to say... The poor horkers do.
Just run away from them. They can't chase you. The final sign is the namesake of the prophecy, the Blood Moon, when Secunda turns crimson from the blood of the hunter's prey. After the four signs is something called the Hunter's Game, which is the Skull's name for the Great Hunt, which varies from era to era. The game might involve the hunting of an entire tribe or just one man. After the hunt, Hersine returns to his realm for another era. So this, how do you feel about this one?
I don't know. I like these ones, but these ones don't super strike me as
they're not like
iceberg.
They're not secret-y, you know,
just the game.
Like, right.
These are just
like, did you play the expansion for Morrowind?
This is it.
Right back
to this expansion talk that we were discussing too.
Yep.
Like, here we go. Here's our expansion.
We have to keep it in mind though, that the number of entries on this iceberg that we're working down is over 500 and we are not even a tenth of the way through. So these are still way at the top.
It is. And I guess maybe that's why I'm also a little curious. It's like, why are there so many entries? It doesn't really seem necessary.
Well, I think some of them are like people who just are new to the series and they just didn't even like Morrowind's maybe 22-year-old game at this point or 20.
Oh no, without a doubt. I understand that, but it's just like, I guess maybe read those that came before you and you might actually have your answer.
Sure. Yeah. And also I might have structured, we didn't make this iceberg. This is one I pulled from online source.
And you
and I would rank some of these way higher up the list than lower. I think that's the other issue.
Yes, for sure. And I mean, like, I get it. I'm glad that everybody likes digging into this stuff. It's super fun. But yeah, just some of them are just like, well, this isn't even really debated. This is just what it is, like, type of thing. And honestly, most of them, it's just like, these are great. These are great ones. So I understand why they're being mentioned as like cool features, because they are.
Right.
They just, I when I think iceberg, a lot of times it's not like it's things that you're digging into.
Right, it's things with some part of like, some secrecy you got to piece the other things. Yeah,
right. Like, what are people digging into and giving their spin on? And it's like some of these is like, well, there's no spin to give. You just explained what happened in this DLC because this DLC is awesome.
Like, yeah, and well, and we mentioned it earlier. You and I are old. Like, this comes from a 25-year-old game. So if you're somebody who has only played Skyrim or Elder Scrolls Online, in some parts of Elder Scrolls Online cover this in some way, but you may not know that, like, okay, there's more to what's actually going on with Hercene, and this is a regular cyclical thing. Like, you may not know the specifics around this. Or, you know, like the horkers on the shore, the poor horkers.
Poor horkers.
Yeah, that kind of thing. We could probably, I'm sure there are going to be others that we could complain about and be like, why is this on the iceberg list? But I also have to see it through people's perspectives. Popular music, so, you know, like,
right. That's more so the thing. It's just like, not that any of these have been wrong, so to speak, as if you can have them be wrong. That's not really what I mean. It's just some of them just like, you just explained an expansion, just sweet expansion. Yep. That's it. All right. You got it. Like,
yep. Yep.
So that's my only thing is like a couple of them caught me off guard because I'm like, well, I guess
this is a surprise to somebody.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, it's a cool twist. So
yeah. Yeah. But we don't have time to get to it. We've got a really good one coming up next that goes way back in the lore to the Riemann dynasty. And of course there are others that are on this list that we're going to dig into in future episodes. So make sure you stick around.
That's time.
Yeah. But hey, that's just how this goes. But we're going to take a quick break. We've got some patrons to thank and the random UESP page right at the end of the show. We got to find out what that's going to be this week. I haven't even hit the button yet. So we're going to find out. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we are back, and I have to shout out our patrons, our newest patrons, on patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You can get ad-free episodes. You can join us for our patron chats. There's all sorts of things you can get on there. Politis, maybe? And Zach, thank you so much for signing up and joining us on there. Also, shout outs to our Daedric Princes every week, because if you sign up at that tier, you get shout outs all the time. Kira C, Blinding Vision, Hercene, Peter R, Austin B, and Mintaka, and to all 114 of our current paying patrons and all of our non-paying, all of our free patrons. Thank you for being here and continuing to listen to the show and support us. We really do appreciate that. Also, Lotus, we got a new review on Apple Podcasts, and they mentioned you in the review. I saved it because it came up last week during the patron chat. I was like, well, I'm going to save this one for Lotus. So this is, as usual, if you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. This is from Gordcar, who says, listen to it all. I discovered this podcast back in September of 2025 when I started playing the Oblivion remaster, and now I'm caught up with listening to every episode. Such a great good podcast. That's a lot of episodes. I wasn't much of a fan of ESO, but I know it fills out a lot of the lore. This series has been a great way to catch all that and better understand and appreciate the Elder Scrolls games I do play. I've also been overseas in the military and unable to play anything for quite some time now. Oh, that sucks.
I'm glad this helps. I can totally understand that, because when I'm in the mood to play games and I have to, I mean, yours is more important than mine, but when I have to go to work type of thing, and I was like, oh, I can listen to something, and it makes me like, hey, you know, it's second best. Like,
right. It's, well, I don't get to play, but at least you get to think about it still.
Right.
But this show helps me still get that Elder Scrolls fix and immerse myself in the world of Tamriel to pass the time. I can't appreciate the show enough. My only complaint with it, Lotus, your smooth, bassy voice has caused a crackle in my speaker. Keep the fun episodes, you guys. I'm thinking when I get back, I'll sign up on the Patreon and maybe even join in a patron chat. We'd love to have you. That's awesome.
Nice. That is official. I need to just bring that up in casual conversation now. Your smooth, bassy voice
is making my speaker crackle. It's funny certain sound systems.
I do apologize for your speaker, though.
Yeah, certain sound systems just like certain frequencies just do that. You know, it's weird.
For sure.
Yeah, so thanks for taking the time to leave that one. That's awesome. Well, here, why don't you share anything that's going on with Tales of Tamriel, and then we'll get to the random page.
So we've been working on it. We're not really overdue for an episode, as we've been kind of bi-weekly. But the big thing is, at the moment, we are about to hit episode 400. That is our next episode for Tales of Tamriel, yeah, which is wild because I haven't been there for all 400 episodes. I've been there for an obscene amount of them when I took over with Arc for the show.
Oh, interesting. But, wait. I just looked it up. And we are, I forgot what number we're at with this show. We're at 391. Yeah.
391.
This will be 392. And so we'll be only 8 episodes away from 400 also.
Almost matched. Funny. Like, that's wild to me.
Yeah.
Because we definitely, you know, this is a weekly show with rare exceptions. Tales of Tamriel is much more like, it was weekly, then it kind of became a little more bi-weekly type of thing. And then there were a few catastrophes that kind of led to me taking over at points. But that's funny. So like, okay. So for example, and like, I believe Tales of Tamriel has been going since 1 year before launch, I believe, is when Agello started the show.
Launch of Skyrim?
Launch of
Elder Scrolls
Online?
Of
ESO.
So, Elder Scrolls Online. Okay.
So it would be 13 years old, I believe.
Okay.
And we are, what, 7?
Yes.
We're 7, because I joined you in year
2020. 2020. I started the show in...
So 6.
Was it January or February of 2020? I think.
Okay. So yeah. So, but yeah, so we're having our 400th episode, which is going to be exciting. We're just going to chat about all our night market stuff. We've been chatting with some of the devs. I'm not sure. It's been a while since we've had one of them join us. It's always super fun, just like it is here when we have guests and stuff like that. I'd love to have somebody join, but, we'll see what we're doing, but it's, it's going to be a fun chat this weekend. We're going to do some reminiscing on some of the classic stuff we've gone through, because to think how long I've been doing this is kind of crazy. It's just kind of become part of my, I don't know, career at this point, that it's just like, yeah, okay. At this point, I've just been podcasting for like going on almost a decade myself, which is like, hey, if you want to feel old, say that aloud.
It's funny to think about that.
Obviously have like giveaways and some fun stuff during the show. Obviously we don't really do much like this. Most people like to listen to us recorded on audio as opposed to
live streams.
We've got people that hang out with us live like we do here, and that's always fun, but it's like, we know where our audience is, because I'm actually part of that audience for all the podcasts I listen to.
There's a reason why audio podcasts work, is because you can do something else and listen to them at the same time.
Correct. So we're going to find some stuff to give away to listeners and stuff like that. But it should be a fun time. We're just excited to have so many years have gone by type of thing. So it's going to be a fun weekend. Fun weekend.
Nice. So well, congrats on 400. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We'll have to have our own 400 soon.
Yeah, it's coming up. Two months. Sometimes I plan things for like these big 100 numbers, and other times they just go by.
I know that's sort of it. Is like, I guess once you start hitting milestones like that, because what was the thing we had looked at, like how long before most podcasts like fade out?
Oh my gosh!
Comically short by comparison.
And then some podcasts will keep going, but they'll only have like an average of less than 50 listeners or something like that. The numbers are weird. Everything content creation. If you have more than 10 regular viewers on a Twitch stream, you're already in the top 1% of streamers or something.
I know that kind of stuff. It's very weird. And why so many people say, just don't look at the numbers, just do it for fun type of thing.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, it's best to do it for that, because it's like, do it for the passion of it. And then if something comes about of it, awesome.
Yeah. Or launch a bunch of shows and run a network like I do, and then make a career out of it.
Or turn it into like a
one or the other
career design where you're really going into it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, we're glad you're still with us almost 400 episodes in and listening to Tales of Tamriel as well.
Yeah.
So awesome. Congrats. I've got nothing specifically new other than the shows that I normally do. I've got nothing other than the shows I normally like. The Fallout Lorecast is still going. We've been going through all the pre-war businesses and how much lore is connected to the games from businesses that existed before the bombs dropped. It is a lot. I am uncovering some really cool stuff. So if you're into Follow Lore, the Follow Lorecast is for you. The Lord of the Rings Lorecast, and then Retro Recall. We just went through four of the worst games on the Genesis and Super Nintendo, and so now we're taking a break. Well, those episodes are still rolling out, but we've started working on the next set of episodes, and those are about classic RPGs, and we're starting with Dragon Warrior, which is really crazy to go back to, having played all of these more recent RPGs, and to kind of see it in reverse. So Retro Recall, if you want to check out me and John from the 40K Lorecast talking about old video games. So that stuff's there. But hey, we've got a random page. And Lotus, this one's from the card game. I'm not going to make you guess. I'm going to let you celebrate the card game because I know how much you like parts of the card game.
Legends is so good.
Yeah. So this is from Legends. It is the Worm Cultist card. The Worm Cultist is a Breton, a common endurance creature card, is not obtainable as part of your collection, but instead appears in the tragedy match on the Isle of Madness story. And the art on all of these is great. Like, this guy looks awesome. So there you go. I don't know if you remember the specific card.
I don't. I actually was looking it up.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Here.
That's actually cool artwork.
I'll link it in the Twitch chat in case you guys want to see it on there.
Yeah, I was going to say. And quick shout out to, I'm probably going to ruin his name, but Wartner, who's a listener of the show, they recently actually reached out because of trying to collect the physical versions of Legends cards. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, hey, I know you collect this stuff. Any chance you know how many were created? And as far as I know, unless there were any that have not been documented anywhere else, I actually own every one of the physical Legends cards that's been made.
Oh, wow.
And cool. So I gave them like the photos of each one so that they know what to actually collect. But if you ever check out like eBay or something like that, even if you want to buy them yourself or go on the USP, there's photos of like, you can see what they look like. The artwork is gorgeous and the physical cards are so, oh man, it made me wish they did more of them because a lot of them are like holographic and stuff like that. They're really cool.
Yeah. So there you go. Worm Cultist card from a game that you can't really play anymore.
Yeah. So, I guess there is a renewal project. So it is. Yes. You know what? I might post that in the Discord. Benefactor gave it to me. There is a renewal project where it is actually sort of playable offline.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, share it around.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out. Chat, thank you for being here, for people chiming in with conversations, new follows, all of that. We can't always respond while we're recording the episode, but we do appreciate you. We're glad you're here. And Lotus and I will be back next week with more iceberg stuff. So make sure you subscribe so you can come back because it's getting crazier as we go. But until next time, stay safe out there. We'll see you then.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.